Here on Stolen Lives, we discuss brutal and heartbreaking crimes against children. Themes may include child murder, torture, and sexual, domestic, and child abuse. I do try my best to remain respectful for the babies in these stories and leave out unnecessary details that honestly, none of us need to know to understand the frustration of why and how this ever happened. However, if you find any of these themes triggering, this podcast may not be for you. Listener discretion is advised. This week's episode is a listener suggestion. Thank you to Nancy for bringing this story to my attention. This story is not just Charlie's story, but his mother Tamika's. And Tamika is a survivor of domestic violence. The statistics of domestic violence in Indigenous communities all over the world are extremely higher than that in the general Caucasian population. And the reality is so much worse because many of these survivors never report the abuse against them because of the distrust of law enforcement. And that distrust is warranted in many ways given what you will hear today. There needs to be change. There needs to be greater education for law enforcement on the sensitivity of Indigenous communities to support these women, men and children who are victims of domestic violence. March 2013. 28-year-old Tamika Mullaney's 10-month-old son, Charlie, was tortured and sexually assaulted for 15 hours by Tamika's new partner, 26-year-old Mervyn Bell, after he had left her naked and bleeding on the streets of Broome, Western Australia. Like many Indigenous Australians, Tamika did not trust the police. But instead of being treated like a victim in that moment, she was pressed as a witness. And that became the focus for police and not finding her son, who would soon lose his life in the most tragic way possible. What happened to baby Charlie is considered one of the worst crimes in recent Australian history. This is a case of child abuse, domestic violence, and alleged police discrimination. This is Charlie's story. This week's episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. What's the first thing you'd do if you had an extra hour in your day? Would you go for a walk, read a few chapters in that book you've been wanting to read, or meet a friend for coffee? If you were anything like me, you wish you had more time in your day. But the question is, time for what? If time was unlimited, how would you use it? The best way to fit that special something into your schedule that you always put on the back burner is to know what is important to you and make it your priority. Therapy can help you navigate through your thoughts to recognise what matters to you so you can make the most out of your life. What's interesting to me about therapy is when I go into a session, I always think I know how it's going to go and what I'm going to talk about, usually about what has caused me the most anxiety since my last session. But then I end up having a completely random discussion about something totally different that I didn't know was bothering me until I started unpacking everything. That has been so useful for me to work through my anxieties and stresses so I can be the best person, mother, podcaster I can be. If you have considered starting therapy, take this as a sign. Give BetterHelp a try. You have nothing to lose. It's entirely online, so you don't need to leave the house. It's convenient and flexible to work around your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. And if you don't click with that therapist, it's super easy to switch to find a therapist that is most suited to your needs. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/stolen today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/stolen. March 19th, 2013. The night started out as a festive one. It was Tamika Mullaney's father Ted's birthday, and they had all gathered for dinner and drinks for that. After a time, the party was winding down, and Tamika wanted to head out and visit her new boyfriend. As she was getting ready to leave, she asked Ted if he would watch her 10-month-old son Charlie for the night. Ted flat out said no, in a decision he would later state in interviews would haunt him for the rest of his life. but he thought in the moment that if he refused to watch his grandson, and Tameka had to take Charlie with her, then maybe she would be responsible and not get drunk and come home at a reasonable hour. So, Tameka gathered Charlie up and they set out to her friend's house. When they got there, Tameka placed the baby down for a nap on the living room floor. She then headed outside to drink with her friends. As I mentioned, Tameka wanted to visit her new boyfriend, 26-year-old Mervyn Bell. And Bell had been at this house all afternoon, and he had been drinking heavily. Tameka had an ulterior motive of wanting to see Bell that evening. She wanted to confront him on rumours she had heard. You see, Tameka had just returned from a trip to Perth, and she was told by mutual friends that Bell had cheated on her while she was gone. But when Tameka asked Bell about these rumours, instead of reassuring her or even admitting to, yep, she caught him out. Instead, he got angry, and for lack of a better word, he was being a complete asshole to her. Tameka was done, and she just wanted to go home. It was getting late, so she went to another friend's house that lived close by to borrow a stroller so she could take Charlie home, leaving the baby at the house. While Tameka walked down the road, Bell followed slowly behind her in his car, his headlights on high beam shining directly on her. Tameka did her best to ignore him, but then Bell launched himself from the car and he attacked. Bell punched Tameka repeatedly. He tore at her clothing until she was naked and bleeding in the street. A woman from a neighbouring house heard the screams for help, and she went outside to investigate. This brave woman ran towards Bell, shouting at him to leave. Bell took off in his car. While this woman, who happened to be a nurse who worked at the local hospital, she called the police. This woman is a hero. Not only did she stop the assault, which would have ended in a murder, but she went into full first responder mode. She got a bedsheet from her home and wrapped Tameka's bloodied and naked body. She brought the serious injured woman into the carport, away from the prying eyes of nosy neighbours while they waited for help to arrive. She also called Tameka's father, Ted, so he could be there for his daughter. Don't think Bell was done, though. He then drove back and aimed his car at the two women, driving at a speed and almost hitting them. But once he knew the police were coming, he left. Now, unfortunately, Ted arrived after the police. He would later state he wanted to get there first. The Aboriginal people of this small community did not trust the police. It was also a small town where everyone knew everyone, and Ted wanted to handle the situation himself without the police involvement. Ted arrived only minutes after the police, and he was met with his daughter distraught and yelling at the police to leave her alone. All she wanted was her dad and her son and to go home.
She wasn't being a good victim. She wasn't standing there in the sheet, dripping in blood, and trying to control all this emotion that was going on with her and say, oh, hello, yes, no, I want to tell you this is what happened. She said, I want my dad. And they decided she couldn't have her dad. The two policemen, one woman and one man, they said that Tameka spat. And then they said, that's assault. You're getting arrested.
It is actually infuriating how the police treated Tameka. It was clear that she was in need of medical attention and that she was the victim here. The police had a duty of care here to get her to a hospital, to make sure she and Charlie were both safe. They didn't need to press her for questions or to demand a statement. They could have easily gotten that from the nurse who witnessed everything, but no. The police insisted Tameka explained what happened then and there, while she was naked and covered in blood and terrified. At this point, two girls are on the scene with Charlie, and they gave the baby to his mother. The police forcibly removed the baby and handed him back to the girls. Now, this obviously made the already distraught Tameka beyond consolable. She began cursing at the police, spitting at one of them, and finally locking herself in Ted's car. Police would actually smash the passenger side door of the car to get Tameka out, and she was arrested for assault. Police were so unconcerned with Tameka's injuries, they were happy to take her right to the holding jail. It was only at Ted's insistence that the seriously injured Tameka was taken to hospital. Ted was torn, because he wanted to be there for both his grandson and his daughter. He knew the girls Charlie was with, so he trusted them that they would keep the baby safe and decided that his daughter needed him more. He didn't trust the police were going to take her to the hospital, and Tamika was injured. She would have life-threatening injuries. A lacerated kidney. Her spleen was badly bruised. She was bleeding internally. Honestly, if Ted wasn't there to advocate for his daughter, she would have died from her injuries if she didn't go to the hospital. Once Ted was confident that Tamika was taken care of, his next priority was to get Charlie and take him home. But when he went back to the house where Charlie was, he wasn't there. Ted was told Charlie was picked up by Belle half hour after the police left, and he told the girls he was taking the baby to Ted. This set off all the alarm bells. By this stage, an hour had passed, and Belle could have taken Charlie anywhere. Ted was in a panic. Ted immediately raced back to the hospital and spoke to Constable Carberry, who was sitting in the patrol car at the hospital. Ted ran up to him and begged him for his help. That his grandson was kidnapped and was in danger. That Belle was not the baby's father and he had no right to take him. Ted was met with indifference. Constable Carberry told him they didn't have the resources and basically it was too bad. That there was only two police cars available, and one was at the hospital making sure Tamika didn't leave, and the other one had to be free at the police station for emergencies. What would be later revealed, though, the second car couldn't leave because the officer was too busy writing up charges against Tamika, as well as Ted for hindering police. That's all they were doing. So knowing the only other police car was at Broome Police Station, Ted raced over there to report Charlie's abduction. He also wanted to report his car stolen, because that was the car Belle was driving at the time. Again, Ted begged the officer on duty to find his grandson. Sergeant Darren Connor would later claim Ted came in smelling strongly of alcohol and, quote, "who knows what else, and he was acting aggressively," unquote. However, the CCTV from this night at the station would later be released, and those claims were not supported by the footage or Ted's own account. Ted would later state he would repeatedly tell the officer he'd been sober for close to 30 years. But because of this unfair stereotype and the implication of this one officer's viewpoints, it seriously hindered the investigation from here on through. Ted lost his patience and left the police station very aware his grandson's safety was not paramount for the local police. Ted would then call emergency services as a last-ditch effort to help save Charlie's life.
Police emergency, how may I help?
My daughter's friend has stolen the baby. I tried to tell the police here, they're not listening.
Well, do you know where he is?
If I knew where he was, I wouldn't be ringing anybody. I would be calling him myself.
And so where are you now?
I'm driving looking for him. It's my grandson, 9-month-old grandson.
Hang on a sec. Have you gone to the police station already?
Yes, I have.
So why are you calling 000 now?
Because I'm not happy with their response. They don't think I'm serious. They need someone to stress on them. They tell me they only got one vehicle on the road.
But that's not going to change if you ring me, sir. I can't ring them.
Is this phone call recorded?
It is.
Well, can you tell them that their grandfather is very, very worried and get someone to take me serious that this guy is going to kill my grandson?
And so what's your name?
Ted Mullaly.
I will actually contact the sergeant myself for you, okay? Thank you. Yes, I will. Thank you for your call.
Is that it?
That's it.
The emergency services operator spoke to Constable Joel Wright at Broome Police Station. She told him about Ted's concerns for Charlie. But Constable Wright dismissed everything, telling the operator that Ted had been obstructing justice, that the family had already taken up too much of police resources. This has to be one of the most frustrating stories I've ever covered. No one is taking any of this seriously. No one knows where Charlie is. A baby. Belle had already shown what he was capable of, and here he is with a 10-month-old child that he has no biological connection to and no one knows where they are. After this, Ted would receive a series of chilling, garbled text messages from Mervyn Belle. Ted then headed back to Broome Police Station. There was hope these messages would show the situation was, for one, dire. But it would also give the police a chance to trace Belle's location. But Constable Wright told Ted this wasn't possible. That's at $800. It was too expensive to run a check like that. Ted was desperate, and he even offered to pay for the phone trace to happen. But Constable Wright again refused, insisting it would all take too long. To come back in the morning to speak to the Aboriginal liaison officer. But by that point, it would be too late to save little Charlie. Given how late it was, Ted felt he had no choice but to go home and sleep so he could search for Charlie at first light. According to the police, after Ted returned home, he called the police station to say everything was fine now, that he had spoken to Belle and Charlie was safe, and they didn't need to look for him anymore. Now, none of this makes any sense, and Ted would later deny any such police call was made. What is clear is this. Broome police failed to do the most basic police work on Charlie's abduction. They failed to enter any crucial information in Charlie's file. They didn't make record of Belle's violent criminal history and Ted's fears that he would hurt the baby. A failing Broome police explained away at the time was because they didn't consider Charlie as missing. Because it was common for kids in Indigenous communities to be looked after by multiple family members. The point here is, Belle was not family. He was a violent man who had almost killed Charlie's mother only hours earlier, and he was now on the run with a small defenceless baby. 6 a.m. March 20th, 2013. Sergeant William Withers arrived at Broome Police Station to start his shift, and he was briefed on the events of the night before, in the biased eyes of the police anyway. That's the official line, because when later questioned, Sergeant Withers would state he had no recollection of this occurring. To him, he would later state he believed it was a non-eventful night, and there was nothing to follow up. So when Ted walked back into the police station that morning, hoping for good news, that they had started searching for Charlie, who at this stage had been missing for 6 hours. Ted was horrified to hear that no one had done anything to find this baby. By that time, news had reached Tamika that her son was missing. Despite her severe injuries and against doctors' wishes, Tamika discharged herself from hospital. In what would have been excruciating pain, she ran 2 kilometres to a friend's house to get their car. She then rushed around town, stopping at houses where she thought Belle could be. Quote, "By then, most of the town knew Charlie was missing, because Dad had rung everyone looking. Everyone was looking for him." Unquote. Deep down, though, Tamika knew that Belle was no longer in the area, and he had taken her baby with him. Ted was also continuing his search, and he also had a feeling that Belle had left town. There are only 2 roads out of Broome, and Ted took a gamble and headed towards Port Hedland. The reasoning behind this, Belle had to have had phone reception to send the text messages to him the night before, and Port Hedland was the only direction with phone reception. And Ted had also tried telling the police this, but they didn't seem interested in searching in either direction for the missing child, or even just calling the local police in neighbouring towns to keep an eye out for Belle and Charlie. Turns out Ted's instincts were right, because at 5:45 a.m, Belle pulled into the closed Paradoo Roadhouse, 460 kilometres or almost 350 miles south of Broome, on the way to Port Hedland. At this roadhouse, Belle tried to steal some petrol by cutting a hose. But when that didn't work, he drove around until they opened at 6:30. Belle filled up his car and took off without paying. 10 minutes later, staff at Paradoo Roadhouse reported the theft, only to be told by police they didn't attend to driveways. After speeding off with the stolen petrol, 2 separate murderers reported Belle driving erratically down the highway. But because no one outside of Broome knew this car was stolen and that the man in the car had abducted a 10-month-old baby, police did nothing, missing this last chance to save little Charlie. It wasn't until almost 12 p.m, 14 hours after Charlie was taken, that police went to interview the 2 girls that had been caring for Charlie when Belle had taken him. Sergeant Withers then called the Police Operations Centre in Perth to advise them of the situation. This was when finally the incident was scaled up to a child abduction scenario, and a missing persons alert was broadcasted to Broome and surrounding towns. less than an hour after this, while Ted and Tamika were sitting with Broome Police. Mervyn Bell raced into the Fortescue Road house in Mardie, 930 kilometres or around 570 miles south of Broome. He ran in through the door with a baby in his arms. He was screaming Charlie's name. Bell placed Charlie down on a table in front of a customer, a man named Gavin Duff, and asked him to call emergency services. Bell then attempted CPR on the baby. Gavin would later state in interviews that Charlie was covered in bruises. He had a large welt on the side of his head, a mark on the centre of his chest. Skin was peeling off all over. By the time paramedics arrived, there was nothing they could do. 10-month-old Charlie Mullaney was dead. He had been alone with Belle for 15 hours. Callously, Tamika and Ted would be told as they were walking towards Ted's truck to drive to Caretha to meet Charlie at the hospital that the baby was dead. Tamika understandably lost it. Quote, "I ran off, crying and screaming. Didn't want anyone near me. I ran to the church and was sitting in the church crying." Unquote. When Tamika and Ted got to Caretha Hospital, hospital staff wouldn't let them see Charlie's little broken body. This sweet baby boy had succumbed to a catastrophic amount of injuries, over 100 in total. Charlie had burns, abrasions, bruising, internal bleeding, broken leg. His genitals had been severely injured. It was clear that Charlie had been raped and tortured for the 15 hours he was with Belle. In a crime that Justice John McKinney would later call one of the most evil cases he had ever encountered. Charlie's memorial was held a few days later at Our Lady Queen of Peace Cathedral. Tamika wrote a poem for her baby boy titled My Child. Quote, "So precious, so innocent, not yet knowing what life holds. Much to learn, much to see, much to hear, much to read. Loving, wanting, adoring and demanding. I love you, my child. I love you, my baby. My dear Charlie boy." Unquote. Ted spoke of his beloved grandson, how he was almost walking and that he was the apple of their eyes. Family and friends sung songs and played guitar throughout the service, celebrating little Charlie's short life. September 26, 2014. Belle stood trial for the rape and murder of 10-month-old Charlie Mullaney. Belle's defence counsellor John Myers argued that the baby's injuries were sustained when he fell from a moving car as it went through a roundabout, when he was laid on hot rocks by a riverbank, and that he died after he went underwater at a river. Now I'm sorry, but a baby who cannot even walk yet, they cannot do any of these things by themselves, you absolute piece of garbage. Counsellor Myers said that despite the prosecution saying his client had lied to police and showed no care for the child, there was evidence to the contrary, pointing to the footage of Belle racing into the roadhouse with Charlie and trying to resuscitate him. That this was evidence showing empathy towards the baby, that he cared for the welfare of this child. Counsellor Myers went on to say, the prosecution's case had simply failed to prove Belle deliberately caused any of the child's injuries that could have caused his death or endangered his life. Again, alluding to Charlie assaulting and torturing himself. Are you for fucking real right now? This is beyond ridiculous. West Australian Supreme Justice John McKinney saw through all of this, and he found Mervyn Belle guilty of sexually assaulting and murdering Charlie Mullaney. In a judge-only trial due to the graphic nature of the evidence. In handing down his deliberation, Justice McKinney said, quote, "Once in every 10 years, a crime is so evil it shocks the public." Unquote. December 2014. Mervyn Bell was sentenced to life imprisonment, with a minimum sentence of 27 years before he would have been eligible for parole. Bell also received a 3-year jail term for the sexual assault to be served concurrently with his life sentence. He would have been eligible for release in 2040, when he would have been 53 years old. He would not make it anywhere near this, however. 9 months later, in September 2015, in one last cowardly act, Bell suicided by hanging in his prison cell. Now, unfortunately, this is not the end of Tamika and Ted's suffering. because a year later, Broome police decided to charge Tamika and Ted with assault towards the police, an obstruction of justice from the night of Charlie's abduction and Tamika's assault. Add more to the insanity of all of this. Magistrate Stephen Sharrop found them both guilty. He said that he felt Tamika was, quote, in control of her senses because she was worried her child would see her battered and bloodied body, unquote. Magistrate Sharrop went on to commend Ted for his honesty when he freely admitted to trying to prevent police from arresting his daughter. Ted received a criminal conviction and a $300 fine, while Tamika was given a 12-month suspended sentence. The Mullaney family did appeal the verdict, and the case was investigated by the Crime and Corruption Commission, or the CCC, into whether Charlie's death could have been avoided if police had acted in a timely and professional manner. In its report, the CCC said that while there had been a delayed and ineffective response by individual officers on the night of Charlie's disappearance, it was impossible to know whether a more rapid response could have saved the baby's life. April 8, 2019. The Mullaney family also requested a coronial inquest into Charlie's death, applying on the grounds that his death was caused or contributed to by the actions of a member of the police force, the act being an omission by police to protect Charlie from harm by taking him into protective custody. The second grounds for applying for the coronial inquest was that it was necessary or desirable in the interests of justice and an inquest be held. But in August of that year, the application was denied by the state coroner because it was determined the investigation into Charlie's death was finalised in March 2013, when Coroner Potter investigated the case without holding an official inquest. He determined Charlie died by way of unlawful homicide, that Charlie's death was determined not to be a failure by police because Ted agreed for the girls to take Charlie, that by that time there was no indication Belle had threatened to harm Charlie, that it was not necessary or desirable in the interest of justice to order an inquest because it was not likely to elicit any new evidence. This was just another slap in the face for Tamika and Ted, quote, "The police arrested me and then they arrested my dad for protecting me when I was a victim of a vicious bashing. The police refused to look for my baby when my dad told them he'd been abducted. It's clear to me that little black lives don't matter in Western Australia," unquote. Dr. Hannah McGlade, who is an associate professor at Curtin University and an Indigenous woman herself, she has been an advocate for the Mullaney family throughout all of this. She said the case highlighted systematic failures within the police force, and that it was a travesty that the coronial inquest into Charlie's death was denied, as violence against Indigenous women and children was a human rights matter of international concern. And that is something I mentioned at the top of the episode. The ridiculously high rates of domestic violence of Indigenous women and men and children worldwide. And that's just those that are reported because, as we know, domestic violence cases regularly are not reported by victims for a whole host of reasons. Some of what we've heard today. Tamika is still tortured by the murder of her son. It's simply too much for her and her dad, Ted. They are still understandably traumatised. Quote, "Every day she had to realise the baby's not here and it has been really hard on her." Unquote. Only in recent years, in June 2022, had the family received a formal apology and pardon from the Western Australian government. The Attorney General saying, quote, "I'm sorry for the way you were treated by the government and the Western Australian police, both before and after losing baby Charlie." Unquote. If you have your own thoughts and theories on the case we discussed today, or any case we talk about on Stolen Lives, please search Stolen Lives on Facebook, like the page so you don't miss an episode, and join the discussion group to talk about your thoughts and theories. You can also talk to us on Twitter, search lives_stolen, or on Instagram, Stolen Lives Podcast. If you like what you heard today, we would appreciate it if you share this episode on your social media of choice, and subscribe and leave a positive review on your podcast app. Today's episode was researched and written by me, Ali. Hosting and production was also by me, Ali. Music is by Mayu.